just when you thought there was no hope for baby boomers. It's the Rational Boomer Podcast. Logic. Common sense. Compassion. Yeah, who knew? Now, here's Mike.
We are back on the Rational Boomer Podcast. Hopefully your day is going well. It is Thursday, and this is the regular day for Old Soul. She was on Monday, but she's back again on Thursday, and that's good to hear. I was looking at some of the numbers of listens to the podcast you were on a Monday, and that fucking just exploded. I don't know what you did, but let's do that shit again. We've got a lot more listens than we normally do on the podcast. Anyway, Old Soul is back, and we always have to find out what you're into, because you're always involved in some shit, and you've got a few things going on and a few updates to bring us, so please do.
The first one, everybody asking about the wild child, she's fine. These little teddy bears back here, she won those at Circus, and she was like, you got to keep them behind you for the podcast. But the last time I sat here, she was like, your head too big. You covered up the bears. So that's what they look like.
Wow. Well, tell her we noted it.
Yeah, she on Wednesdays, my daughter does her axe throwing. And so they were axe throwing today. And after they were throwing the axes, they were going to go to a lounge. And so she called me and asked, could she go? I'm like, absolutely not. It's a lounge. They drink. You're not 21. You can't go. And so she was like, not happy with me. So my daughter dropped her off at my TT house. When I get off work, I'm gonna go get her and bring her home. And I called to say, hey, I'm on my way. Now she was angry all day. And then she's like, well, can I just stay a little longer? And I'm like, well, what are you guys doing? And so my auntie's boyfriend was over there with his grandkids and she was hanging out with them. And she was like, yeah, you know, earlier we learned how to make habanero salsa. And right now we're eating pork chop sandwiches. I'm like, okay. So I told her I would get her after the podcast so she can, you know, hang out a little longer.
Well, the and your daughter is doing axe throwing? Of course she is.
Yeah.
I remember you told me about that one time before. I'm thinking, wow, this girl's going to be interesting through life. She's not going to be one to be messed with. So what it sounds like is this wild child is discovering a whole new culture that she's never experienced before, coming from where she's coming from. Because what she's coming from with this highly religious, hypocritical family and religion, this has got to be just totally different for her.
Yeah, she's liking it so far. I didn't think she would bond. I have an uncle. We call him Uncle Cleo, but his name is like Cleophas, right? Yeah. And at my mother's birthday party, he was like, come over here and let me teach you how to play spades and dominoes. And she was just kind of looking. He was like, because if you keep this up, you're going to know how to play these games up in jail. You can get these women for their commissary money. And I didn't think they would bond like that, but they're like cool with each other. Like when him and his wife get out of church on Sundays, they always pick her up. They go to Mario's. If anybody in Vegas, they know Mario's. It's on the corner of MLK and Lake Mead. And on Sundays, they sell like dinners to people getting out of church and stuff. She always want to go there and get like a catfish plate and all that stuff. That's her friend. Even when she was angry with me today, she like called and talked to him about it. But I had to let her know, like, you're entitled to feel however you want to feel. You can be angry and upset. You can't be disrespectful. And, you know, you have to follow the rules. But you can feel however you want to feel. And she didn't really, like, know what to do with that. She's like, I'm like, yeah, you can be mad, you know, just be mad. But you're still not going to go. But anyway, she ended up having fun with my TT. So
now I have to, I hate to make a reference to racial type things, but I don't know what this girl looks like, but I'm assuming she's a young white girl from Texas or whatever she's from, right? She's a young white girl. So she's coming from this highly religious family, and she's staying with you. What's going to happen when you send back a young black woman eating the food and doing the things and throwing fucking axes? These people are going to freak the fuck out.
My whole family has said that. They're like, we don't know what she gonna do. You send us to her family in May. I'm like, she gonna be all right. And she did say, like, every time I go to Mario's or Uncle Cleo, they'd be like, Cleo, where you get this little white girl from? Like, but she does. She like have fun. She like hanging out and stuff. There's a skate park not too far from where I stay. Like, all the kids go there. They hang out. Their skateboards, their park, their bikes and stuff. She likes to go there and hang out. So it's not like she just around us. She around a whole bunch of kids. And then right. she volunteers at the Boys and Girls Club. Cause you know, like, when you stay here, you've got to volunteer. So, she does that. The kids like her. She like the kids and stuff too. So when I talk to her, her auntie, I tell her what helps is just to like give her a lot of attention, give her some freedom, but keep an eye on her. But she needs like stuff to do like all the time. She has something to do.
Right.
So hopefully they'll be able to continue that where she's at.
Well, I think
or where she's going through.
I think what's going to be amazing here, and I'm just making a guess based on what you've told me, this girl had some issues coming from the family she came with. And this experience staying with you and Uncle Cleophas and all these people that she's interacting with is probably going to have a dramatic effect on who she is and how she is and how she acts. And it's going to be extremely positive. So over and above what you're doing to help her out with her reproductive medical situation and giving her a place to stay, she's getting an education or an exposure about what it's like to be a young woman. And I hope they appreciate that.
Yeah, they seem to. But we already told her Glendale is like only like four and a half hours away. Like, don't go to Arizona acting up because, you know, you're within driving distance now. So I think she'll be okay. She's studying because she has homeschooling. And when she goes to Arizona, she's going to go back to public school. And I forgot what it's called, but they have to like test out. And then it'll give them like their grade placement, like where are you at in your grade level. So right. for her sample test, she only missed the 12th grade by like a little bit. So my nephew, he's been like coming over here and like helping her and tutoring her and stuff. So she can, when she takes her actual test out, she can test that grade level and she doesn't have to like start in the 11th grade, you know?
Well, that's good. So that's good.
That's what we're kind of focused on with her now. Just making sure that she stays on top of that so she can test at her grade level.
Well, when you run out of time, when you're not taking in women dealing with abortion and you're not lecturing at prisons, after this, after this success, maybe you can open up a home for wayward girls and bring in girls that need to be straightened the shit out and the old soul will take care of it. Or not.
I thought about like being a foster parent once. And
I'm fucking kidding, old soul, just like now.
My family were like, you cannot be. They told me I couldn't be a foster parent. They're like, because you don't know how to give people their kids back. And I do think I would be like one of those people that have a hard time with that. So that's not for me.
Okay.
I go out and volunteer, but I couldn't take a kid in and then give them back. That'd be kind of hard to do.
Now, you wanted to give an update too on some other young woman that had stayed with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, she, the one that her family, they talked her into leaving and going back, and it didn't go too well for her. Three things happened with these women within the past week. One of them is her, but I'm not going to say which particular situation was her, but it did get reported on. I'm happy that they're not printing her name and her situation.
Right.
But there was three situations. The first one, that one was in Houston. The woman went to the ER and the desk people refused to treat her. And so she ended up having a miscarriage, like in the restroom of the lobby of the ER.
Wow.
And then it was a battle to get them to take her to the back, even after that happened. The next one that happened, it was security actually kicked the woman and her husband out of the hospital because he was just kind of like, you gotta help her. And, on the way home, she ended up giving birth in the car and the baby passed away.
Oh, terrible.
And then there was another one in Florida where the husband was trying to get the wife treated and the hospital refused to take her. And so he actually had to call 911 to send an ambulance to the hospital to get her and take her to another hospital.
That is absolutely
and
horrible.
That baby didn't live either. So none of these had babies who survived this situation.
Wow. You know, and that's the thing. And that's why it's important to have you on and talk about these things, because it's real easy to say, I'm against abortion, I'm for abortion, I'm pro-life, I'm pro-choice. But the stories that are behind these young women in these states that have banned abortion are just absolutely tragic. I know you're an emotional person, and this is tough on you sometimes when you hear these stories. I know you try to hold it together here on the podcast, but I know this affects you deeply.
Yeah, it's it can be triggering. The other day I was kind of like, I couldn't sleep or anything. It was like going on 2 days and I was like, why am I so triggered? And it was just to watch people abuse the system in that way. And I know what that feels like. And I think that's what's triggering it. And I have to think of a more healthier way to deal with it. But it is pretty difficult when I see them, they're here, and these are not like stories that I'm reading in a paper. And so then to go outside of that and read other people's stories on top of what happened to the woman that was here, it just compounds it, and it makes it a lot more difficult to deal with.
Yeah, it's so much bigger than what you believe, pro-choice, pro-life. It's bigger than that because there are women truly suffering. There are children mm-hmm. dying. There are women dying. There are women that are in severe pain, all because some politicians want to have their way. And that to me is so frustrating.
Yeah, and the sterilization is when you're like actively trying to have a family,
right.
And then something that's outside of your control and you become sterile because of that. It's so cruel to do to a person. But I do see that before it was just kind of like they thought that this was like a woman's problem, but they don't understand that these women have males in their lives that has to go through this with them.
Right.
And it's pretty hard on them. And when they have to deal with that, then of course they have to talk about it and their whole family and community has to deal with that. So you will never see like 50% is pro and 50% is anti, because it skews so much further because men experience this too.
Right.
The woman that was standing here, you know, she had to just say, I have to remind myself that I'm not the only person who lost a child. Like my husband has to grieve with me.
Absolutely.
I didn't tell her how I really felt about that because, you know, he was one of those ones that was pressuring her to come back home. But I do think it's a hard lesson for him to learn. Just
yeah.
To say it like that.
Yeah. It's absolutely terrifying. And, I'm glad I live in Minnesota. You know, we're kind of a safe haven state here too. But, you know, you're talking about these women going to the hospital and having these incidents and still not be able to be taken care of. It's got to be a quandary for these doctors. I mean, they take a Hippocratic oath. And this is directly opposing to the Hippocratic Oath. You've got somebody there suffering and struggling and potentially dying. And because of whatever politicians or the law says, they just can't do it. I don't know how you even deal with that. You have the equipment and the skills to do it, but you're not allowed to do it.
Yeah, and I think the way that they're doing it now, which is making the hospital so much more extreme, is before, the doctors would sit with their insurance and then also the like VPs of the hospitals, like they would sit collectively and try to make these decisions. And the doctors would be so against it and threatening to leave. And it would be all of this drama around it that instead of allowing the women to see a doctor and having the doctor get involved, they're turning them away at the front desk.
Right.
You know, so security is them out. The people at the front desk are kicking them out. So they realize when the doctors get involved, it's more complicated because the doctor are saying this is the medical diagnosis, and they're actually coming up with ways to treat the women. So once that started happening, then it's like, okay, we're not going to let them see the doctors at all, because right. once they see the doctor, it's too much of a liability. So it's not the doctor turning them away at this point.
Right.
It's the hospital staff doing what they're told to do. And it seems like the insurance companies and the VPs are the ones that's making those calls instead of the doctors making those calls.
Well, that's something I realized. I was doing a TikTok yesterday, and I realized this. It was kind of an epiphany that our biggest problem within healthcare in this country is people don't understand their roles. If you've got somebody with a needs for reproductive healthcare, you would think the doctors would make the decisions, but instead it's politicians and lawyers that make the decision. That's fucked up. For regular stuff, like you were just talking about, when I have a sickness or you have a sickness, the doctor should make a decision as to how you're treated, but in fact, it is absolutely administrators or insurance companies. And what I suggested, if they're so anxious about doing healthcare, if my car breaks down, I don't call a fucking plumber. I call a mechanic. And the fact that these doctors aren't allowed to do what they need to do, I said, you know, if these lawyers and these administrators and the judges and the insurance people, if they're so dead set on doing medical care, maybe we could put them in a big fucking room and they can practice by extracting the heads out of their own asses, because they have no business being involved in life and death situations, but they insert themselves there. And all too often we don't get the treatment we deserve. And sometimes people die, and that's too far.
Yeah, and I think that in some of these situations, you don't even have to have a medical background. It's just cruel. If you have an ectopic pregnancy, there's nothing you can do there. If you've already miscarried and you need a DNC, how are you looking at that as murder when the fetus is already dead? There's no heartbeat. Right. There's nothing there. So how is that considered murder? So when they say stuff like a DNC is murder, no, it's not. It's non-viable pregnancy. There's nothing that can be done at this point. Right. You are just forcing this for some strange reason. I don't understand that part. So it's so weird to me that you would turn someone away and force them to go with a dead fetus inside of them until their body literally tries to dispose of it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
The infections that women can get from that. It's a reason that, you know, with these 1864 laws that they like, it's a reason that women died so often during that period, especially when they were pregnant and during childbirth.
Right.
We have the technology to prevent that now, and they want to go back to that. It's pretty backwards.
It's
very cool to do.
It's pretty backwards, and because we were talking about those situations you mentioned, we should probably bring up the Supreme Court case that heard opening arguments to that yesterday. And this is regarding the state of Idaho and emergency abortions, much like the two cases you were talking about. Something happens, they need treatment, and they're turned away. So now this is being brought to the Supreme Court. And unfortunately, you would like to think this will turn out well and help things, but our experience with the Supreme Court tells us otherwise. I don't know how long the Supreme Court is going to continue to do this, and I don't know what their decision is going to be on this particular case, but it's absolutely frightening. I'm hearing stories now in Idaho because of this abortion ban. 22 or 23% of all OBGYNs have fucking left the state. That's going to cause a problem in the state. When you start losing doctors, it's going to make it very hard to live in Idaho or any state that might be going through that.
Yeah, not only in that state, but other states, Texas, North Carolina, it's pretty much happening everywhere. But not only that, but, you know, typically when people graduate from medical school, they have to do a residency. And they don't want to do their residencies in these states.
No, of course not.
So you're talking about women waiting like almost a year for a simple pap smear, or having to go to another state just to get a pap smear. People don't think about, you know, not trying to be graphic, but yeast infections, STDs, all kind of stuff happens that need to be like treated right away. This isn't anything you could just leave alone. But it does kind of just say, you know, you're on your own.
Well,
and you can look at it as, you know, you should stay there and fight and help women. But then on the other hand, that puts you in a position to where you're going to be jailed. That puts you in a position to where you can lose your license. That puts you in a position to where you can be sued. You know, you have to understand where they're coming from. But then that doesn't negate from the fact that there's still people there that need help that's not being helped.
Well, you got to live your life, and you don't want to put yourself at risk for being arrested for something silly. And I understand why people will move away. And you have to wonder, I'm wondering what you think, you know, when they have these draconian laws and these types of things happen where doctors leave and people leave, there has to come a point in any given state that says, oh, we fucked up, because now we don't have any doctors. Now women are leaving in droves. There has to be a reckoning point at some point when the bad choice or the wrong choice was made, and the accountability comes to pass, because these states are going to struggle with a lot of things when they're doing what they're doing to 50% of their population. Not to mention the fact they're probably going to take a pounding in the elections. I mean, there are women all over Florida, all over Arizona, all over Idaho, that are terrified about their future. And the idea that they would vote Republican is just fucking crazy. They're not going to vote Republican. Even if they are Republican, they're going to want to save themselves like the doctors do when they leave the state.
Yeah, it's sad to say, but as bad as it is right now, they don't care. So it's kind of scary to think, at what point, like, how bad does it have to get for them to care, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you listen to what they say, Mike Johnson was talking one day, I will never forget this, but he said, we care about all life. We care about the life of the unborn. He corrected himself mid-sentence when he was saying, we care about children, we care about babies. Like, he corrected himself. Like, no. We care about the life of the unborn. Like, he had, instead of, like, he messed up when he said, we care about babies and children. He corrected himself to make it clear that we care about the life of the unborn, which means we don't care about the mother. We don't care about the baby. We don't care about the children. We just care about the unborn and making them be here. So it's kind of like, they say it all the time. They don't even say, we care about children, we care about babies. They say, we care about the unborn. That's what they say. The only time they say they care about children is when it comes to reading books, LGBTQ plus rights, trans rights. That's when they say they care about children. Other than that, they don't care. So they care about children when they're trying to take away rights. They care about the life of the unborn when they're trying to force birth on women, force women to be septic, force women to be sterile, force women to pretty much die. And they don't understand that trauma that these women are going to have to live with, them and their husbands. Because the woman who stayed here, her husband has a pretty long road to go into forgiving himself for that.
Right.
Because it didn't have to happen.
Right. You know, I've been accused of being a glass half full guy, looking at the positives. And there aren't a lot of positives in the current situation with reproductive health care in some of these red states. But I have to wonder, with what's coming up in November, the election, and how bad this all is for the Republicans, at some point when something gets whipped up and it gets bad, eventually it has to culminate and start to get better. And I'm sensing, as bad as it is right now, it can't really get much worse. It can only get better. And that things may be lining up with the election and the Democrats and such, that we might get to a better place. It's unfortunate that people have to struggle through these times. But I'm hoping that over and above getting better from what it is now, getting better from what it used to be, because we have a long way to go even before the Republicans started messing this up. We had a lot of things to fix. Yeah. So I'm wondering if this will make people more aware about the problem. You know, that's one thing the Republicans did. They brought everything to the surface. Now we see all the bullshit that we've been hidden from us all these years. I'm wondering if this isn't an opportunity when we get past the election to actually get some things done and do better with reproductive health care than we've ever done before. I'm hoping that's the case.
I hope so, and I think so. From the way that I look at it is I think that it will humble a lot of people. America has always had this arrogance, like, we're better than everyone else. We're, yeah, you know, looking down on everybody else, like we're just the head honcho here. But I do think that what the Republicans are doing right now is like a huge eye opener. We get to see how other countries make it affordable for their children to, you know, have higher education and have the best and the brightest. They see what, they see that things can happen here. They see that a democracy isn't a guarantee. Your rights isn't a guarantee. This is something that we have to constantly pursue. It isn't something that we can just kind of like, right, be lax-daisy about and see what happens. Or we could just assume, okay, even if a Republican is there, it won't be as bad. I don't think anybody will, in this lifetime, will ever say that again. Like, no. Oh, it won't be that bad. It's just 4 years. We will never say that again because we know how devastating it can be. So I do think it humbled a lot of people, and then it woke up a lot of people to democracy is work, and you have to put in that work. It's not going to be guaranteed if you don't do that. So if you look at a positive, I think that's something that came out of this.
And I think the Roe v. Wade, the abortion issue, is going to be the big issue in the election. And when these Republicans mm-hmm. get absolutely devastated in the election, mm-hmm. largely because of that, that's either going to cause them to wake up and change their perspective or get the fuck out of the business, because they won't be in the business very yeah. long. After this election, nobody's going to stand for this bullshit again. People are going to fight before it even starts. You know, I think you're absolutely right. When they thought about overturning Roe v. Wade, a lot of people said, you know, if they were on the fence or it really didn't affect them, they said, how bad could it be? They did the same yeah. thing when mm-hmm. Donald Trump was elected president. How bad could it be? Well, we found out to be really bad in both cases. And I don't think anybody yeah. will want to go back to where we are now once we see some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And I do think that once people start like fighting for something, they have like a purpose.
Right.
You know what I mean? So even though you see like the students wilding out on some of these campuses right now, they have like a purpose. And so threatening them with jail time or whatever it is that they're being threatened with, it's not a deterrent because there's a purpose there. And they know at the end of that purpose, something good is going to come from it. And right. I think that Republicans have underestimated that to some degree. It's the same thing, the way that they fight to take away women's rights, like how hard they fight, they believe in that purpose. There's like 10 times as many people who are fighting against that. And they have that purpose, and I do think they're going to win out in the end. I just saw Pennsylvania. Right. And I'm like, Nikki Haley, how is she getting 17% of the vote?
Right, exactly.
We ain't seen her in forever. So it is proof that that's what's happening. However, it doesn't stop the obstacles, because the Supreme Court like literally just ruled that, I believe it's in Texas, if you are under the age of 65, you can't do mail-in anymore.
Right.
So just as they're fighting, they're doing the voter suppression, and they're doing all of this stuff, what they fail to see is the more that they do that, the harder the pushback is going to be.
Right.
It's kind of like if your kid is dating somebody that you don't like, the harder you try to keep them apart, the harder they fight to stay together. And that's pretty much what's going on here. It's like these voter suppression laws and all this crap that they're doing, it's just making the younger people fight like that much harder. And then they have women behind them, and then they have the minorities standing behind them. It's like they're fighting just as hard. I don't understand why they can't see that.
Well, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, when I heard about these protests on the campuses, a lot of people are upset about it. It really warmed my heart. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up in the 60s. Yeah. I was pretty young in the 60s, and the protests were just endless for women's rights, for civil rights, for the war against Nixon. There were kids out protesting all day, every day. Some of them got ugly. But what happened in the 60s showed the compassion and the passion these people had, the willingness to put themselves at risk to protest something they believed in. And for the longest, and then that, you know what? It worked. One of the reasons why the Vietnam War ended is because of the protesters. One of the reason why women got more rights is because of the protesters and civil rights too. But as I've been watching the young people as of late, you hadn't seen that passion or that fire to fight against anything. You know, they have their own lives. They're just doing whatever they're doing. And I always said to people, I said, if you want this country to continue to improve and not die out, we need the young people fighting, believing in something and pushing something. And we really haven't seen it that much up until George Floyd, up until the abortion thing. And now this thing with Israel. I'm really glad to see young people getting out there, speaking their mind, and doing something about it, because that is absolutely essential to get us to the next place, which is going to be much better than what we're dealing with now.
And look how good they are at organizing. All they need is a smartphone and a tablet.
Right, right.
You know, they're so good at like organizing, and they have that purpose and they have that fight in them. I really don't think the Republican Party saw that coming. And no. I do think part of that is they don't really embrace youth unless they're trying to. There's some of them, like in churches and different things, that they have thinking a certain way. But it's not enough. It's really just not enough. And then they, even some of them are fighting for, or they're just saying, regurgitating information. They don't feel that passion behind what they're saying. Like, you know, I remember at one point the Trump supporters, how hardcore they were. They were diehard. They were there. They were online, trash talking, going crazy. And now I don't see them showing up for his trial anymore. It's just kind of like Trump is not a purpose. He's not something to believe in. He's not somebody to fight for.
Right.
So you're not going to see that same energy that was there.
No.
That fire is just dying out. And it's good to see it.
And I think something to me needs to be said. We've been hearing about some violence at these protests. And what people have to understand, it's not the kids causing the violence.
Right.
What's happening is what happened in the George Floyd riots and that stuff. You've got these anti-Semite, anti-racist, misogynist instigators, agitators coming in trying to start things. And you have to understand why they're doing that. And I think, you know, people will say, oh, Joe Biden's got to be upset because he's letting this happen and that happen. This is a strategy by Republicans. Send agitators in there, make it look like a shit show, make it look violent, make it look bad, and blame it on Joe Biden. If it was just protest, it would be enough to deal with. But the agitators, the Republicans, have to make it into a violent scene. And that's what's happening. These kids aren't getting violent. They're just protesting. Millennials or Gen Zs, they aren't typically violent people. But those Republicans sure the fuck are, and they're the ones creating the agitation and the problems in these protests.
Yeah, there's always going to be plants. There's always going to be people that do that. But when you look at it, just like overall, out of as many people as it is, there's just a handful of people that's going to go there and try to instigate and start this crap. You know what I mean? Especially when you're among people who are not violent, they're just trying to hear their voices. When you see them, I remember in Tennessee when they went and they all just kind of like laid on the floor. Anytime that they're protesting like gun violence, they're just like laying their bodies on the ground. They're not doing all this extra violent stuff. And then people don't realize what you see on the news. They will literally take one incident and they'll just like doctor the tape and they'll play that one incident over and over and over again. In the meantime, you've had 50 incidents between that of protest. You have this one and you have to take that one and manipulate it to make it look bigger than what it is. When they do that, that just proves that it's not violent. You have to manipulate that footage. It was the same thing when Trump used to run those ads that said, this is going to be Biden's America. And you see the people protesting in the street and all this stuff. And it's like, but all that happened like right now while you're in office. So you're taking your footage and you're saying, this is going to be Biden's America. When it's like, this is already America and you in charge right now.
Right.
And they didn't think that people were smart enough to connect those dots, which was, I'm like, how do people not see that? But, you know, I do think they're used to talking to their supporters instead of normal people on Earth One who can see through that bull crap.
You know, there are people, Republicans, that will push back when I say that there were instigators and agitators in the George Floyd riots. Say, no, that was Black Lives Matter. They caused the problems. They created the violence. They burned the city. Now, I live in Minnesota. I grew up in that area. I know exactly what's going on down there. And there was plenty of video of agitators, not Black Lives Matters, some big, dumb white guys in military outfits breaking windows and starting to cause problems. We know that those people were, in fact, arrested. Now, I will say this. When they get into this and they start creating this disruption, there is a certain amount of mob mentality, and people do get caught up in it. I'm not saying that people of color or the white kids, because there was a lot of white kids down there, too. They didn't get involved and get caught up in it. But it would have never happened had it not been for the agitators and the infiltrators. And that's always the case. You can count on Republicans or the racist or whatever. It's one and the same to go in there and stir things up. And that's what happened with the George Floyd protests. And this is what's happening with the kids in college, too. It's just really annoying. It seems like Republicans have a strategy for everything to try to twist and divert and distract to make it a Democratic problem or Democratic cause situation. They're constantly trying to game the situation, and they're getting progressively worse at it. It's easy to pick it out.
I think that the people who support them, not all of them, but a majority of them, they do know better. But they just repeat that because they want it to be true. But just because you want it to be true doesn't make it a fact. No. Because these are the same people who can say that about the students now and about the George Floyd protest then. These are the same people who will say that the assault on the Capitol, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't a big deal. So it's just kind of like they tell themselves whatever it is that they have to tell themselves to make it okay to have the behaviors that they have. So they have to justify their own actions and their own belief system and support. They have to figure out a way to justify it. And so they just try to take whatever opportunity they can to justify their own actions instead of just owning it.
Right.
Because we all know that that's not the party of responsibility, accountability, truth, none of that.
No,
that's just not them. So they have to do something to trick themselves into doing what they want to do. And just do what you want to do anyway. You don't need a reason. Just own it. Be truthful about it.
Now, on the reproductive health care, there was some good news. Not much good news. It shouldn't have been had to be news at all. But in Arizona, they repealed that 1864 abortion law that was just absolutely ridiculous, archaic, antiquated. It was draconian. It was fucking stupid. The Supreme Court said, yeah, you can use it. They went twice to repeal it, and the Republicans stopped it, in spite of the fact that they were getting all kinds of negative response from people in the state and people around the country. So somehow they actually repealed it. That's nice. That's good. But that's not really a win. That should have been repealed the first time through. They still have some issues with abortion in Arizona.
And the last time I was here and I was saying their new talking point was If you need an abortion, you can just drive out of state. You can catch a bus or whatever. That very next day, Gavin Newsom came out and said that he was going to make a way for people in Arizona to get to California. What that plan was, I'm not going to say. And on top of that, he came out the very next day with an ad, and the ad was a pretty young white girl, blonde hair, blue eyes, getting arrested, trying to go from one state to the other. So that talking point pretty much like died overnight. And I actually felt kind of silly because I was like, I can't believe it's going to be their talking point. They don't care. I was like going off. And then I wake up the next morning and Gavin Newsom has his ad on television like that quick. Wow. So it ended that talking point that they tried to put through, like, oh, you want to tell people that they can go to another state because it's a state's rights issue? Okay, what about these travel bans? And it was literally a travel ban ad that he posted. So he immediately drew attention to their travel bans so that they are aware that, yeah, this is what they're saying, but this is what they're doing. I haven't heard anybody say that talking point since then, and then turned around, and then the law got repealed. I don't know if he had anything to do with it, but there's no doubt in my mind that they saw that.
You know, these travel bans really have me upset because that's restricting the movement of a citizen of the United States to anywhere in the country, which is a constitutional right. We have that ability. And to take that away is just unseemly. I don't even get it. But you know what struck me about this? And now keep in mind, I'm an old white guy sitting in my living room. But with this situation where women need reproductive health care and they have to go to another state, and if they're having travel bans, we almost have to create a fucking underground railroad for women of any color just to get health care. That's fucking ridiculous.
You have to. You have to help them move from one place to the next place. It's the same thing. And then you have to be pretty tight-lipped about it, how you help them move and get around this stuff. And then I know that some of these states, especially Texas, they pretty much know, but they don't know how the system works, but they know that women are traveling. And so what they're doing now is they're trying to subpoena women's medical records. And one way that they're trying to do that is in Texas, you can actually sue someone. So if, I don't know, I'm an Uber driver and I take a woman across state lines, then somebody's going to try to sue me because I was assisting that woman. So I would just work with them and give them the woman's name. And then they try to subpoena her medical records from another state. And then that's how you can get her that way. So far in the courts, that's been failing because it's all kind of HIPAA laws that prevents them from doing that. But there are states who are behind the scenes trying to get access to women's medical records from other states to try to prosecute them in their states. So even though they are saying, okay, you can travel or whatever people want to tell themselves, it's not that easy. No. Most of the people who stay here, like, I literally don't know their real name. And if I do know their real name, I'll never say it.
Wow.
Because that's pretty much how serious it is.
That is absolutely crazy. You know what we need, old soul? And I'm not offering you, because so don't even get any fucking ideas, okay? But we need a present. we need a present day Harriet Tubman to kick some old white man's ass. That's what we need.
It'll be nice if we could have it, but you know, it's so sad that we have to be in this position in the first place, to where your medical records could be seized. If they try to subpoena for your phone, so they can see what apps you have on your phone, what your period tracker is telling them and all that other kind of stuff. It is like insane. And it's so sad that most people don't even know about that. I think some of the stories are starting to break through, but there's like so many that people just don't know about. And a lot of people, they stay quiet and they stay silent because they have to go back and live there. They don't have the luxury of staying here. They have to go back home. And so a lot of them don't speak out. If their husband knows about it, they don't say anything. If their family knows, they don't say anything. It's very secretive, which is so unhealthy because they don't have an outlet for what they just went through. Can't tell anybody. You just kind of have to swallow it and keep pushing.
You know, I've said this before, when they overturned Roe v. Wade, what they really overturned was a privacy right in the Constitution. They said you don't have the right to privacy. And I've heard some other politicians talk about this, and we maybe need to address it when we get into this new term and Democrats are in control. If you can do this to abortion based on the privacy right, there's one other thing that ties into the privacy right, and that's guns, certainly gun registration. Yeah. If we can get this draconian over fucking abortion, we should be able to say turnabout is fair play. And let's put some heavy-duty restrictions on guns and see how those mouth-breathing, red meat-eating, dumb motherfuckers think then.
They can do it if they want to. Like, that same energy that they have for women, they can totally have that for guns. And I live in Nevada, so we have conventions here all the time. Reptile conventions. I actually like to go to that one. But they have, like, gun conventions and everything. It's crazy that there are ghost guns.
Yeah.
That I know there are laws now, but it depends on the state that you're in. And it's very easy to cross state lines and go to another state and get a ghost gun and come back. That's not that difficult. But if you come to a convention in Vegas and you're selling guns and the only thing you're checking is an ID, what's the point of having a background check? You know?
Absolutely.
And then there's just certain weapons that shouldn't be allowed on the street, period. So it is something that they can control pretty quickly and easily if they wanted to. They just don't want to.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's fucked up, to say the least. Also, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
We're back on the Rational Boomer podcast. Old Soul joins me today. It's always an absolute pleasure. I got to tell you, sitting here talking to you is far more pleasurable than me sitting here talking to myself. That's fucking dull sometimes. I'm not that entertaining, so it's great that we have you with us.
I don't like talking to myself either.
No, I'm not that fun. Anyway, we were talking about Arizona and repealing the 1864 abortion ban, and it's about time. But there was something else that happened in Arizona that we need to talk about more along the lines of politics. The Arizona Attorney General came out yesterday and issued 11 indictments for the 11 fake electors back from 2020. I mean, this is 4 years after the fact. Yep. People have to wonder why it took so long. But there are some other unindicted people that either haven't been served yet, or I don't know if they're going to be indicted, but we're hearing those names. Those names are far more familiar. Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, John Eastman, Jenna Ellis. Donald Trump is an unindicted co-conspirator. And, you know, the thing about it is this may end up not being all that different from what we have in Georgia. You know, everybody's focused on Georgia and how damning that is.
Yeah.
It may be the same case. I mean, there was some video footage of one of the fake electors, and they get a call, or was, I don't know if it was a fake elector or one of the officials there, but he was standing there and it was on video. His phone rang, but he had a special ring for that call, and it was "Hail to the Chief." He picks it up and he goes, "Oh, it's POTUS again." Well, that's troubling. Donald Trump is calling Arizona officials directly on election night. He might have some similar problems in Arizona that he has in Georgia.
You know, I was thinking about this. Donald Trump, he doesn't have enough sense to know when he's in a hole. So he dang sure don't have enough sense to know when to stop digging. He just don't. You know what I mean? I think that at that time, not only should he have known he was in a hole, but instead of digging, he should have been trying to claw his way out of it, such as actually admitting that Biden won and doing a concession speech. He could have been trying to, I don't even want to say redeem himself, but just do the bare minimum to just kind of be like, all right, he was tripping for a little bit, but, you know, once everything passed, went through, he stopped. But he kept going and kept going and kept going. And that's where the charges is coming from, is because he just didn't know when to stop. These people didn't want to indict Trump. They didn't want to deal with what they're dealing with now. They didn't want to do that. He pretty much forced their hand at this point. That, like, what else can you do?
Yeah, he really
And I
did.
Know it's been 4 years, but 7 years is the statute of limitations. So you got to look over your shoulder for the next 7 years. I don't get it, but it's a good thing I don't get it, because my mind ain't crazy.
But if you're Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, or Jenna Ellis, who basically rolled down in Georgia, can you imagine sitting at home dealing with all the shit you got to deal with? And then all of a sudden you hear, oh, you got an indictment from Arizona. For fuck's sake, this has got to be driving them absolutely nuts.
I don't know how Rudy Giuliani is going to pay for any of this. I don't know. I did see him the other day. He was on a podcast with this. I don't know if you know who she is, but she gets emails from God, that prophet lady that the right loves so much.
Jesus,
but
really?
He was... he was sitting there doing an interview with her, and she was reading one of God's emails, and he was just kind of like giving words of encouragement to Rudy Giuliani, and, you know, telling him he's going to do this and all this great stuff. And it's just like, are you for real? I know he didn't believe it. I know he was just there to grift and promote his gold bars or whatever, but I don't understand at this point how he's still loyal to Donald Trump. I don't get that part. I don't think there's any person on this planet that I would do all that for.
No. You know, it's funny. I do a podcast every day, and I can't remember ever getting an email from God. Now, I suppose I might want to check my spam folder, because it may have, you know, gone to the spam folder. But when I do, I will certainly pass it along to the listeners. Jesus Christ. You know, anybody can have
You've
a podcast. Huh?
You've never seen her?
No, I've never seen her.
I will have to send you one of her videos, but she gets emails from God, and then her sermon is like reading God's emails, and like, this is what God told, like, she's literally reading emails from God. So I always ask myself this, I kid you not, I always ask myself, is somebody like really messing with her and sending her random emails? Is she lying about this? And she know better, or is she like really that delusional to think that she's getting emails? I can't think of herself a name, but she's like the email guy chick on her. And she has like so many followers. She has like all of like the top people on her show interviewing with her and stuff. And she really does get like, I don't know if she believes it or not, but she gets emails from God. I'm pretty sure somebody gonna write you an email and let you know her name.
Yeah, probably.
And I'll have to find one of her videos and send it to you. She is all the chain, and she just had Rudy Giuliani on her show the other day. It was like, dang.
The first question I would have to her would be, what domain is his email on? God. Is it God at heaven.com? God at what? It's so amazing to me that people, it's amazing to me that people do this.
I would ask, what did you do to God? Like, he talked to everybody else. Why are he sending you emails? I don't think it's so weird to me, but people take her so seriously. It's insane. It's insane. She's worse than Kat Kerr, the lady with the pink hair and her God stick. She another crazy one.
I would love to be
a
guest.
Kat Kerr?
No, I don't know her.
She has pink hair and she has a God stick. It's like a big like wooden stick, kind of like a cane. Yeah. And it's like her God stick, and she like slams it on the ground, like, I spiked you, and all this. I'm stuck.
Old soul, we need to talk afterwards about the shit you're watching. Because we got to put some guardrails up. I don't know what the fuck you're doing. I would love to be a guest on this woman's show, and she'd say, okay, the email from God says this. And I would say, well, that's funny, because I got a text from God that said, you're a fucking nutcase.
I think, like, sometimes, like, you know, like, when I say, like, some of these people are, like, delusional, and they're being preyed on by Donald Trump and the right, you know what I mean? Like, I almost look at them as, like, vulnerable people.
Absolutely.
And they're being preyed on, and they're being, you know, told things and being twisted all up in the head. I really do feel sorry for people like that. I really do. Because anytime that you can sit there with a straight face and read emails from God, it's like something is going on with you. Unless it's a grift, but she seems so serious in it. She really, really does.
I don't get emails from God. I do get emails from Garage Door Jeff. Now, he could be God and just not telling us. I don't know. I mean,
I wish I could think of her name, but
wow. Now I'm going to get an email from Garage Door Jeff, and there's going to PS with some biblical passage or some shit. Anyway,
and a PS, of course,
the PS. Yeah, the PS will be the biblical Psalm 23 or whatever. But it's Thursday today. There was a day off in Donald Trump's criminal trial. It starts back up today. I don't know for sure. I think David Pecker's still on the stand. It's really interesting. This is the first witness, and there's been a lot of damning testimony that have come out of David Pecker. And he's not even the worst witness. If you look at Donald Trump, he looks haggard, to say the least. He looks like he's in trouble mentally, even more so than he's always been. But it's interesting hearing about this thing, because we had the hearing on the gag order, and the judge didn't offer a decision on it. He said he would offer it at a later date. And I thought that he might give it on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, just because it would give some space before they got back into court. I figured he didn't want to give a decision prior to the court day, because it would just turn it into a shit show. And I get that. So I thought he'd do it on a down day. Now some people are suggesting that he's going to spill it today. So a lot of people that are listening to the podcast may have already heard what he's decided. What are your thoughts about this? I think he's probably just going to go with this minimal fine to start with, and then see what happens from there. What do you think?
I think he's going to give him the rope and let him do what he want to do with that rope. I do think that if there was one judge who would hold him accountable, like for real, it would be this judge.
Yeah.
I do think so. Especially since, like, seeing that Secret Service has been making plans of, like, in case he goes to jail, like, how that's going to work. That was good to read today. And it was crazy, because I was talking about that on the last episode. Like, I would literally, like, have Trump go with Secret Service to the jail and, like, make arrangements just in case I got to put you over there. But it seemed like those talks are going on behind the scenes already. So I do think it's just a matter of time. I don't know how I feel about, and I guess I can ask you this. So some people are saying that Donald Trump wants to go to jail intentionally. And then other people are saying that he's trying to see how far he can push it.
Well, I don't
know where I stand on that.
I think he's obviously trying to see how far he can push it. And he may very well, in his mind, the way it's working now, may want to go to jail, because he sees it as an opportunity to be a martyr and to fundraise off of it. I mean, in the last 5 days, while he's been in court, he's raised $1 million a day. So it has helped him somewhat. But here's the thing, you know, people are saying he wants to be put in jail, and that may be why the judge doesn't want to put him in jail. And in spite of the fact he might become a martyr, and in spite of the fact that he would be able to fundraise on it, you can't just let him continue doing what he's doing, because he's going to turn this this trial into a circus, and the judge is just not going to have that. If he wants to fundraise off of it, great. Donald Trump in his mind might think, yeah, I'll go spend 2 days in jail or 1 day in jail. I can handle that. I think once he gets there, he's going to realize he fucked around and found out he's not going to be able to handle it very well. So give him a shot. Let him experience it. And then maybe that will shut him up. I doubt it. I doubt it. I mean, we got 2 months left in this fucking trial, and the witnesses are going to get worse and worse. He is going to either pass out, keel over, or lose his shit. He's not going to sit there quietly for the next 2 months. It's just not going to happen.
I think the reason that he looks so tired and haggard is because he is. Like, yeah. He's staying up till like, what, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning posting. And then after that, I'm pretty sure he has to, like, I don't know, read these articles that make him feel good about himself. And then I can imagine for him how long it takes to get the hair and the paint on and all that other kind of stuff. Like, he's not sleeping. And his diet isn't anything that's going to give him a boost of energy. If anything, the way that he eats is going to, like, weigh him down and keep him sluggish. That's why I don't think they're giving him any kind of uppers, because when he gets to court, he's just like crashing out in court because of his lifestyle.
Right, right.
I don't know what to say about that. I don't know what to think.
Well, I think you should look at it. I think Andrew Weissman, he is a prosecutor that's on TV a lot. Mm-hmm. He said, instead of trying to second guess all this stuff, what he wants this, so don't give him that. Just treat him like anybody else. The law is the law. You break the law, and there is accountability and there is punishment, and he should get it. Now, if he raises more money, great. If he becomes a martyr to the dumb Trumplafucks, well, he's already a messianic figure. He's already God to them. So who cares if he's a fucking martyr too? You got to do something to stop him. Because, I mean, after the gag order hearing, first thing he does, he steps outside the courtroom and starts posting on Truth Social and violating the gag order. Here is a guy that doesn't respect the court, doesn't respect the judge, doesn't respect the law. You got to do something to make him respect it.
Yeah, he's doing it at a time, too, where people are starting to pay attention. Because people, this is like the time where people who normally don't pay attention actually starts to pay attention.
Right.
So it's a pretty awful time to do that for, because even he's speaking to an audience of one. He's just speaking to his base. He's not speaking with mainstream Republicans. He's not speaking to independents. You know, dang well, he ain't speaking to Democrats or progressives. Like, right. He is speaking to that one group of people. But in the meantime, he's turning everybody else off. And it's even to the point where his supporters are not willing to give as much of themselves as they used to. They're not even willing to go stand outside. And he is like pretty much begging them to come and stand out there and protest. And now that they're not doing it and he realized they're not going to do it, it's, the police are keeping them away. They're not letting them come. They're making me go through a tiny back door, whatever all this crap it is that he has to tell himself. But who I feel sorry for is not Donald Trump. I really do feel bad for the Secret Service. Like, most of them are like military. They serve their country. And this is supposed to be an honor. And they got stuck with Donald Trump. And now they have to go to prison with Donald Trump. Like, how unfair is that? So in this whole situation, I feel bad for the men and women that's going to have to go through this for him. I really do. It's just not a good place to be. But I did see there was a bill introduced that if he's convicted, that he stripped of his Secret Service detail. And I hope that that passes. With the House the way that it is, it probably won't. But hopefully after November, that's something that they can do, because nobody deserves to be stuck with Donald Trump 24 hours a day for 7 freaking days a week.
No.
Nobody deserves that.
Yeah, you're probably right. It won't pass prior to the election, but after January 3rd, it could very well pass, and it should. I mean, why do we, and he shouldn't get his salary anymore, his pension. I mean, it's like anybody.
Yeah.
If anybody's in a job and they break the law or something, they lose everything, and he should lose everything. As it is, he's not going to have much money anyway. He's going to have to sell off Mar-a-Lago and all this stuff. It's funny sitting there watching him, though. He seems very angry, and he's trying to put up this front like he's a tough guy. But that won't last long, because it's going to break him with his attention deficit situation. He's not going to be able to sit there unless they're sedating him, and they might be. That's why he's so low-key. But he seems to get energy every so often. And somebody told a story about when he was president, they had to treat him a certain way in order to keep him focused. You know, they'd have new papers come in and this paper come in, and they'd move him to different spots to keep him moving. And I can kind of relate to that to a certain extent, because if I'm sitting in my chair here just watching TV, or if I'm in the car with my wife, I can technically fall asleep. Of course, I'm not bitching about Joe Biden falling asleep. So I'm just an old guy who falls asleep from time to time. I can't imagine sitting in a courtroom listening to people kick my ass all day and try to stay awake. It just, there's no way he's going to do it. He's going to continue to fall asleep. He's going to continue to have bodily functions that are abhorrent to everybody around him. And it's just, it's laughable. And I think if it was any other elderly person, we'd feel sorry for him. But with Donald Trump, he spent his life tearing other people and being mean. It's almost like it's just desserts right now to watch him be embarrassed.
Yeah, it's not just listening to people who don't like you. Like, this is Donald Trump's like inner circle. Right. These are the people that he knows the most. You know, like, he knows their wives and their children, and like, these are like his people. So that's got to be kind of like a double whammy. Like, if it's some stranger out there that doesn't like old and they talking trash, all right, I don't care. But if you put like my best friend up on the stand, or if you put like my brother's wife or somebody else, like somebody who knows me and thinks that way of me, that's got to be hard for anybody. I don't care how cold his heart is. And then I think a lot of it too is he may have expected for them to throw themselves in the, like, just throw themselves on a stake for him. Like, he might have expected them to do that.
I'm sure he did.
And it coming to that realization that that's not going to happen. That's got to be hard for him too. It's not funny, but if it was anybody else, I'd feel sad. But it's kind of like your homie is on the stand, and he is looking at you in your face, and he is telling all of your business, and you can't say anything about it. It's just got to suck so bad. And the crazy part about it is he doesn't have any emotions about it. Like, he nobody's ever seen him like teary eyed or anything. It's just kind of like the seething anger, and it's like, you know, he isn't a Charles Dickens character. He isn't going to like go to sleep and have a dream and wake up in the morning and be changed. That's not going to happen. That just is who he is. And just to think, like, most of us, we get our karma along the way, right?
Right.
You just, something might not work out this way. Did you get your karma along the way? Just imagine waiting. You don't get your karma except for when you turn 77 years old. All of that karma, all of that old stuff, all of that trash, that dirt, whatever, it all comes and like dumps on you all at once.
Right.
I can't even imagine that. No, like,
I don't know,
like,
how somebody survived
that. I got away with this.
I don't even know how somebody survives that.
I'm pretty sure he thought he got away with it.
Yeah, he did. You know, the ironic thing about this case is that his defense is he wasn't trying to affect the election. He was trying to save his family, Melania and his kids, from the embarrassment of it all. He was just trying to do that. But the ironic thing is, if you look around the courtroom during these times he's in there, Melania's not there, Barron's not there, Eric and Don Jr. and Ivanka and Jared, nobody's fucking there. That's got to be kind of hard to take, too. You're sitting there literally all alone, except for the people you pay to be there. And your family doesn't even come to sit with you. And you're trying to pass off the fact that, oh, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm whatever, I'm a family man. No, you're not a family man. So much so, these motherfuckers won't even come out and support you when you're in a criminal trial. It's pretty sad, really, when you look at it. But because it's Donald Trump, I just have to giggle about it.
I think that his family is there for him just as much as he was there for them.
Right.
You know, like they don't know what it's like to actually care about each other and be there for each other. They make their rounds on Fox News and all this other crap, and they are never asked, like, why are you not at court with your father?
Right.
Are you going to go to court? Are you going to show up? What day are you going to appear? None of those questions come up because they all know what the answer to that is. It's kind of like MAGA thinks that Trump started at 2015, 2016. That's
right.
When he started.
Right.
They don't look at his history or his past. They don't read his own children's statements about him not being there for him or any of these other salaciousness that went on. He never showed up to any of their graduations, but all of a sudden he wants to show up to Barron's graduation, whatever. They don't see that. And I mean, it to me, it's kind of laughable when I see them like talking and like really seeming like they're mad and angry about this, knowing what their previous words were before this. It's crazy. It's insane that they can even sit, like, that'll be like me going to bat for my father.
Right.
Like, what?
Well,
that happened.
You know, the one aspect of this trial that I mentioned this before, and I haven't heard anybody else say it, but the kind of personality that Donald Trump is, the narcissist, as I've said, narcissists can look good from a distance, but when you're up close, you see the cracks and the problems and the jerky behavior and the selfish behavior. And that's why families don't typically like narcissists. And that's why narcissists don't typically have close friends. My point is, with his behavior and his attitude sitting just feet away from the jury, I have a feeling if they're made to sit with this guy every day for 2 months, they're going to hate this motherfucker by the time it's done. They're going to be tired of his bullshit.
I wonder if they see what we see. Like, when I saw him, like, he loves his props, don't he? When he was standing out there with the little papers and he was flipping through it and talking about the articles he read or whatever. It was so cringy. I'm like, ugh. Like, it was hard to watch.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they have a difficult time watching his behavior. If this is cringe for them as it is for us. But I don't know, because he's not really talking, but his body language and the way he carries himself, that could be cringy for them to watch. For me, it's hard to watch, but I'm listening to him and I'm seeing the people behind him standing in silence. And it seemed like they're surprised that he's doing this. And I just wonder what the jury see when they look at him. Because, you know, they're looking at him. I'd be staring them down. There's no way I couldn't do it. But
yeah,
I wonder what they think about that.
They might think it's a novelty right now. But when you spend 8 hours a day, 4 days a week for 2 months with this same motherfucker, it's going to get hard. It's going to get hard to deal with and hard to stand. And that is going to work against him over and above all the witnesses and all the evidence that will be thrown out there. You know, I've said before with Donald Trump in this particular trial, going to jail is the least of his worries. His biggest worries are all this evidence coming into the public purview, and he's going to be embarrassed, because that is the one thing that narcissists fear the most, being exposed for the failures and the stupidity they have. And that's what's going to happen in this case. It's already started with David Pecker.
You know what else is working against him as well? His attorneys. And it's not because they're doing his bidding, you know, whatever. It's because these are not likable people.
No.
Like, Elena Haba, if she stands in the background and she's just kind of quiet and you know, put herself together, that's one thing. But it's like the moment this woman opens her mouth, people don't like her. It's the same thing with his attorneys. I know the one attorney was like trying to make an argument about the women, like women just make up type of stuff to get money out of Trump. And it's like, you don't see that there's women sitting on the jury. You don't. And it's not that that type of thing doesn't happen. But for his attorney to make that type of statement, and then you turn around and you put Pecker on the stand, and then you turn around and you have the Stormy Daniels on the stand. Then you turn around, you have the long time mistress on the stand. Then you turn around and there's like the Access Hollywood tape and this and that. But instead of like saying, yeah, he was a playboy, he did this, he did that. It's just kind of like, you know, these women just be making up stuff to come after Trump.
Yeah.
It makes them not only not like your client, but not like you too. So it's kind of like you kind of have to be knowing how to read people. You have to be compassionate. You have to be some kind of like empathetic figure. Neither him nor his attorneys is giving that off. And well, I know it's not their fault. I know it's not their fault when it comes to him and his actions, but they can choose what they say. They can choose the way they describe things. They can choose not to talk about women like for some strange reason. We all just want to go after Trump.
Well, that's the thing.
That's kind of funny even saying that.
That's the thing. I don't think I don't think they have a choice because he makes them say what they have to say. And what they say is so stupid. That could be the only explanation. You can't take lawyers that went to major colleges and became lawyers to make these stupid comments. I mean, these lawyers have not really made a friend of the judge either. In that gag order trial, the judge pretty much had enough with them. They said, you're not answering the questions. You've offered nothing here, no evidence. You're losing credibility in this court. Well, that's a hell of a thing to say to a defense lawyer early on in the trial. How do you redeem yourself from that if he's already said you've lost credibility with this court? That's pretty fucking harsh.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty early and you could bounce back. But when you have Trump as a client, you can't bounce back. It's impossible to do that. But it's like, even though they should have, you would think that they have trial experience. I don't know how much they do or don't. But even if you don't have trial experience, we've all watched trials. Even like the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial. We all see Chu, he sat in his seat. He kind of like directed things, but they put Camille up front and center. Why? Because she was a woman. Why? Because she was articulate. She was strong, but she could like pull back when she needed to. And then you have Amber Heard's team over here. Nobody liked them, which kind of made them not like her too, you know? Especially when they get caught up in lies. This team is going to get caught up in lies just as well. And it kind of feels like if I was sitting on a jury, I would look at it as like, your client is getting caught up in lies, but you're getting caught up in lies too. So how do we trust your witnesses? How do we trust your evidence? How do we trust you? It's kind of like self-sabotaging when you don't have credibility, not only with the judge, but the jury as well. Because his team is going to get caught up in lies. They did with Judge Marchand, but luckily that was out of earshot of the jury. Right. So what's going to happen when they get caught up in those lies and the jury doesn't trust them anymore? Well, it's like, there's no way that they can even think that this is a good idea.
There's one thing to note about Todd Blanche. He is the lead attorney for Donald Trump in this case with Judge Marchand and the Manhattan District. Todd Blanche is a respected lawyer, or was a respected lawyer before he took Donald Trump.
That's the one that left his firm, right?
Yeah, he left his firm. Now, here's the problem with Todd Blanche. Todd Blanche is a good attorney. But most of his entire career has been a prosecutor, not a defense attorney. So now all of a sudden he has to flip roles and be the defense attorney. And he's clearly showing he doesn't know clearly everything he should be doing. He might be a great prosecutor, but he's a shitty defense attorney.
Yeah. He should know about how to read a jury, though.
You should be. Yeah.
And in addition to that, he should know how to, I mean, the things that Donald Trump wants you to say, there's a way that you can kind of like word that differently to where it doesn't come off offensive. And I think another problem that he may be having is one thing that I know coming from my community is the prosecutor, they have resources at their disposal. They have investigators with a phone call. They have experts with just one phone call. When you're working for Trump, you don't have that type of resources. A, he's cheap. Yeah. And then B, the people that he put up, they're not credible. So you don't have access to the same resources that you did as a prosecutor, which is wild because typically when you're the millionaire, you have just as much resources as the prosecution team does, but now he doesn't have that. So that puts him in a disadvantage as well, but he's not doing anything to make up ground for what he's lacking. I guess he's just in a tough situation and there's nothing he can do. I would just like to think that there would be something creative that he could do. It's like he ain't even trying. He's like, you know what? I got paid. So
I think he's going to have the toughest time with Stormy Daniels on the stand and Michael Cohen on the stand, because both those two aren't above talking some shit. And Donald Trump is going to want to say something back. That's when things could get a little crazy in there, when those two, because those two can talk about the most embarrassing things that Donald Trump does not want to get out. And when they start doing stuff and he starts getting pissed off, he's not going to be able to control himself. He's going to say, Michael Cohen's a liar. He was in jail. Yeah, motherfucker, for doing your bidding. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good argument here, buddy. But when those two hit the witness stand, I think it's going to get crazy in there.
I think Stormy Daniels especially, because A, she's a woman.
Right.
B, even though, you know, her profession back in the day, it doesn't mean she's not intelligent. And she is quick on her feet. Like, yeah. I've seen her, like, give interviews with, like, Jimmy Kimmel and different people. Like, she is so quick on her feet. And it's just kind of like you have to be when you come from that type of world and that type of lifestyle. Right. And I think they might be underestimating her to just like, oh, she used to be a sex worker. So they feel like that they can just dominate her. And I'm just like, oh, they're going to be in for a rude awakening. Like the street girls is the ones you really got to watch out for.
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't see that, but she can hold her own. That's going to be interesting. And the other one, what was that longtime mistress?
Karen McDougal. Karen McDougal.
Yeah, she knows like so much intimate details about him that I'd probably just fake like a stomach ache and just stay home from school that day. I wouldn't even want to go.
Well, you know, Donald Trump's probably not going to be able to fake a stomach ache because the judge told him specifically, if you don't come in here when you're supposed to come in here, there's going to be a warrant for your arrest, and they're going to drag your ass back here or put you in jail. Yeah. So hopefully Donald Trump will remember that. I think one of the other situations that's going to be particularly rough for Donnie Trump is Hope Hicks. Now, Hope Hicks is a little more refined. She may be not as embarrassing, but she was in the know. She saw everything that happened. She was standing right next to him for most of it, and she ain't there to help Donald Trump. She's not a witness for the prosecution to help Donald Trump. She's saving her ass and saving her reputation. And she's going to spill some shit that Donald Trump does not want people to hear.
I've heard him, especially with E. Jean Carroll, talk about the people. I don't know. What do you say to your inner circle? Like, what do you do to combat that? These aren't strangers. These aren't Democrats. These aren't leftists. Like, these are like your people. Right. And from what I can understand, him and Peck are like, they may not be cool now, but up until the day before he testified, like they were cool, you know? Yeah. Like, how do you spin that narrative in the news? Like, I guess they were all bought and paid for. I don't know how you spin that. And I don't know anybody that's going to buy that.
Well, and see, that's the thing about narcissists. Ultimately, you have a circle of associates or friends or acquaintances, but in the end, they all abandon you because you fuck them over or you insult them or you do something. They all abandon you. And we're seeing that pretty much happening. As much as Donald Trump has supporters amongst Trumplafucks, think about everybody that was around him. Anybody that's still supporting him is supporting him from a distance, and only because if he goes down, they're going down. That's the only reason they're supporting him. So he's standing out there on an island. I don't know if he's feeling it or not. He's like the kid that nobody wants to play with and mom and dad pay some kids to be his friend. That's who his lawyers are. And he's probably treating them like shit too.
Well, I mean, his father did used to pay children to come to his parties, so I mean, I don't even think he knows what it's like to have a real friend. Like, it has to be like a mutual beneficial type of thing. It's always transactional with him.
Yeah.
You know, but he still has to feel that sting from his homie being on the stage or on the stand testifying against him. Michael Cohen, I think he's used to it by now. I always sometimes wonder if Donald Trump, like normal people, like we have regrets. And I wonder if he ever like regrets, like, you know, maybe if I wasn't so cheap and I'd have just, you know, paid him, he wouldn't be on the stand right now. Or, you know, maybe if I'd have looked out for Cohen, he wouldn't be coming up on the stage next. Like, I wonder if he thinks that to himself, or if he's like one of these people, like, if I had the chance to do it all over again, I'd do it exactly the same. I wonder if he's like one of those type of people.
I don't think so. I think narcissists, the ones I've experienced, they never have regrets. They think everything they've done is absolutely perfect. And I can give you an illustration of that. Donald Trump was interviewed on a television show one time, and they were talking about his religious beliefs. He didn't say anything specific because he has no religious beliefs. And the interviewer said, well, do you ever, you know, you ever pray and ask for forgiveness from God? Donald Trump said no, because I haven't done anything wrong. That's his mindset. Yeah. He never thinks he does anything wrong. He would never own up to that. So it's impossible to have regrets if you never thought you've done anything wrong.
Try being an evangelical supporter of his and hearing him say that. He cheated on all of his wives, and he got all these baby mamas out there. He done bankrupted people. He done, you know what I mean? And he has absolutely no regrets. Like, try squaring that away in your head. But you're right. He is the type of person like that. Because I just seen an interview he did where he was just talking about how wonderful overturning Roe v. Wade was and how great it's working out for the states. And I was just sitting there like, did he just say it's working great for the states? And he doesn't know, like, the political climate that we're living in right now. He doesn't see these races being lost right now. I think he came on the verge of like saying that one time when he was like, I'm happy I overturned it, but you guys got to think about it. We have to win elections. I think that's as close as he can get to saying, yeah, I probably shouldn't have did that. Like, that's as close as he can get to it. Cause Donald, I like literally saw him yesterday interviewing, saying that it's working out great. It's working out great. Everybody's happy.
If you notice, Donald Trump is doing the very same thing with Roe v. Wade that he did with COVID. He knew COVID was bad for him, so he tried to convince everybody, because he's a master orator, that it's no big deal. Nothing's going to happen, even when he knew it was going to happen. Same thing with the Roe v. Wade overturning that. He knows it's bad, but he thinks he's so smart he can convince other people to believe, oh, maybe it's not bad. Maybe it's okay. Maybe he's right. Maybe everybody loves this. He should have learned from the fatal flaw, because it fucked him and the COVID thing, and it's going to fuck him here.
But that's the thing about COVID, January 6th, and his presidency in general, how horrible it was. He shouldn't say those things. He shouldn't be allowed to say those things. But it's almost like you can understand it because that's in the past.
Right.
And he's just trying to rewrite history, so you can get that. But Roe v. Wade is like happening right now. Like, you can't rewrite history as it's happening. Like, it's going on right now. So how do you say that right now when people know that it's not okay?
Well,
when
he tried
women are really suffering, their families are suffering, like right now in the middle of it. How do you rewrite that? It's
he was trying to do the same thing with COVID. While it was happening, he was telling us it's not happening. It's okay. It's not real. Mm. It's a hoax. It's the same thing he's doing with Roe v. Wade. He knows he's fucked, so he's just trying to use his magical oratory powers to convince everybody to believe the way he wants them to believe. And he always fails when he does this. We're getting toward the end, and I wanted to bring something else up because I need some insight on this. Also today is the opening, or the arguments for Donald Trump's immunity claims with the Supreme Court. Now, there's no way he should get any kind of immunity. That would just create all kinds of chaos and havoc, not only for Donald Trump, Joe Biden, any future president. It's fucking crazy. Now, when we were talking about Roe v. Wade, you and I had a little conversation about how we thought it would turn out. And I thought it would turn out one way. You thought it would turn out another way. Turns out old soul was right in that situation that they did overturn Roe v. Wade. I didn't think they would because it was going to be devastating politically, but they apparently don't care. You were right about that. Now, I got people talking about the immunity thing. I don't see any way they give this guy immunity because it would just cause all kinds of problems. But I'm curious as to your perspective from this as we are dealing with the opening arguments of the immunity case with the Supreme Court.
I don't think I would know until I can just hear what it is that the Supreme Court are asking.
Right.
Because they're not really good poker players. They tend to ask questions that are geared toward an opinion that they already have. You already know Clarence Thomas and
right.
You already know where they're going to be, but I'm just kind of like anxious to hear the questions that they ask and the tones that they have. Common sense would tell me that this isn't even a thought, but common sense told me that they wouldn't even take it up in the first place. So I just kind of have to see and hear what it is that they're asking and how they're asking it. And then that's going to point me and my feelings in the direction that we're supposed to go. I kind of still feel like they're going to hear arguments and they're going to do the whole song and dance type of thing. And then they're just going to prolong it for as long as they can. And then I'm kind of leaning towards they'll come out and just say, no, you don't have absolute immunity.
Right.
I do think they'll try to be crafty in the wording of it, though. Like, they'll try to make it seem like, you know, even though he lost, try to make it seem like it's not that bad the way that they worded, or maybe give them hope to try to raise the argument again type of thing.
Right, right.
That's
right.
What I think. But
well, I've got a solution. If they give him immunity, this is what I think should happen. They give Donald Trump immunity. Then, of course, they give Biden immunity because he is the president. So if everybody's got immunity, as soon as Donald Trump gets immunity, then Joe Biden takes the Marines and so say, go grab up Donald Trump, take that motherfucker to Guantanamo and throw away the key. And then, of course, people will say, well, Joe Biden can't do that. Of course he can. He's got fucking immunity. Now, Joe Biden probably wouldn't do
that. It's not supposed to make.
But I tell you what.
It's not supposed to make sense, right?
Tell you what, Joe Biden.
Because, I mean, if you look at the House, as they're sitting here in the House saying absolute immunity, Trump isn't responsible for anything. He's to be the president. At the same time, they're trying to prosecute Joe Biden. So it's not supposed to make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. It's not supposed to. It's just supposed to be chaotic, keep everybody all twisted up, focused on the wrong things, look over here, don't pay attention over there. That's what it's about. I do think they're going to drag it out for as long as possible. Just what is at the end of that drag out, I'm not sure about.
Well, people will say, well, they could do that, but Joe Biden would never do that. And that's probably true. But just let Kamala get to be fucking president and see what the fuck happens. He will be going to Guantanamo then.
Yeah, I do think, and you know what, that's part of it. That's what makes them comfortable with making these arguments. You know, as much as they bad talk Joe Biden and how dangerous he is and corrupt he is or whatever, they know at the end of the day, he wouldn't do any of the stuff that they're saying. Because if they thought for 1 second, just like 1 second, that Joe Biden would start snatching up people in Congress and snatching up Trump and doing all this crazy stuff, they would hesitate. It doesn't take much to fear them because they're cowards. I mean, look at Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's still shaking in her boots, scared to, you know, put Johnson on the chopping block. So it's like the reason that they're so bold and they can do these things is because they know Joe Biden is not going to act like that. I don't know, though, because I do think that, you know, it depends on the situation. I would never say he wouldn't do anything. Politicians, you never know. But But I do think when it comes to like freedom and democracy, he might do something out of left field that we don't expect, especially when he had his second term.
He might, but in his second term at 82, anything could happen. And I'm comfortable with Kamala becoming president if something could happen.
Yeah.
And if Kamala ends up being president, she isn't quite as soft and gentle and nice as Joe Biden is. Mm-hmm. And then God help the Republicans that fuck around and find out with Kamala as president. That's not, they've treated her horribly. If she has any kind of revenge in mind, it's going to be trouble for the fucking Republicans.
Yeah, there's been plenty of time. Well, she's been a tiebreaker, I think, more than any other like VP in history. Right. So a lot of stuff that happens in the Senate, we don't see it. We don't pay attention to it, but she's there. She's handling her business and she don't hesitate to, you know, to put us ahead. I do know that they've been trying to work on the filibuster, like lifting it for certain things here and there. I think if they have a majority in the House and the Senate, that they would just squash it and just kind of like stack the courts and do a bunch of other stuff. I do think that that may be an end to the Supreme Court as we know it, as far as them being so extreme. It's just them putting more judges up there. Right. I don't see them breaking to tradition and like firing them or anything like that. No. I do think that they'll just start stacking it with more people to make it more balanced. And I remember when Joe Biden was like running for office, it's like an interview. I don't know if people paid attention to it or not, but he definitely said that's something that he would do.
Yeah. And you know, Alito and Clarence Thomas have said, if we get a Republican president, we'll retire. Well, even if they don't, they won't get a Republican president. They'll get Joe Biden. But they're fucking old. Time is running out for them, too. So it's conceivable something will happen in the next 4 years that they aren't there anymore. They get replaced. Then all of a sudden, the whole climate changes in the Supreme Court if the Democrats have the ability to replace them with Democrats. And, you know, at the very least, I hope that's what happens.
Even if they don't retire, I think that because Biden, he kind of seems like one of those people who does stuff and people are just not paying attention to it.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. Like the Republican Party, they cause so much of a distraction. It kind of works in his benefit. Like with the student loan, he just like chips away like a billion here, a billion there. Like he's just chipping away with it. And then a lot of people don't realize like Joe Biden has appointed like far more judges than Trump ever did. And a lot of people don't know that, but he has. And it's just because they're just a bunch of noise and distraction. And he's just like over here on the low, just like doing what he needs to do. And so I do think that when it comes to the Supreme Court, it'll be a similar thing. Like we'll look up and all of a sudden there'll be like nominations and hearings and different things going on. I have no doubt that he would do that if he had the House and the Senate behind him that would put that up.
Absolutely.
And no doubt he'd do it.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to wrap up the Rational Boomer podcast. As always, we go along with Old Soul because she has a lot to say and we want to hear it. So, Old Soul, thank you for joining us, bringing us up to date with your situation and input on all the other things. Thank you very much for coming out.
Thanks. Thanks. It always goes by quickly. It's always fun.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk to Old Soul next week again. And for those of you listening, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. Hope you have a great day. And we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Boomer Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.